You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making this world a better place one show at a time. At least we're trying.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Thank you very much, and as always, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show right here at WTTTY on Blog Talk Radio, the talk of our times. And this show is always about making the world a better place. In any way that you think that you can make the world a better place, this is the show for you. In any way or any kind of effort, no matter how small or how large or how minute, if it's about making the world a better place, hey, this is for you. And I congratulate you on that. And I want to congratulate a lot of the people out here who are, especially some of the community leaders who are taking some of our youth, our young people under their direction and trying to steer these young people into something positive instead of being out here on the streets, doing wrong or out here on the streets and trying to save their lives because all of the crime and things that are going on here that the authorities can't seem to get a handle on. So I want to congratulate all of those people, community leaders throughout Chicago and elsewhere also. I mean, if you are out here trying to help our youth, young people, to keep them alive, because, you know, a lot of people are in the hospital because they were shot. If you're out here trying to keep them alive, give them an education, get them off the streets, get them into, you know, schools and colleges, and, you know, hopefully they can wind up getting a really, really good job. I applaud you because we need people like that. And that is one of the ways we can make the world a better place. Get out here in your community. Find a way to help out in your community, even if it's going to the local food pantry to help out the hungry, help pass out food to the hungry. It doesn't matter. Anything that you can do, you know, educate our youth, you know, like some of the famous basketball players are, you know, giving money like Michael Jordan, people like that who are role models themselves and who kind of came from some of the same and similar backgrounds as some of the youth, the young people in our slum areas and ghetto areas in the certain parts of Chicago. You know, so I commend all those people who are doing that. But however, we need more, because there's, for every youth that we take off the street, for every youth that we turn around, there's 5 or 10 others who are not being turned around, who are going to go pick up a gun, who are going to go out and just shoot people or rob people or just assault people in general. We have to get to those people too. Some, in some cases, criminals, you know, young criminals, they're going to be what they are. You know, I mean, it's hard to change them because they, you know, like committing criminal acts. And those kind of people we have to take off the street. Even if we find a way of getting the bad guys off the street, that is also an element of making the world a better place. You know, and that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. Do something in your community to make the world a better place. If you're concerned about crime, if you're concerned about young people in your community and you see them going down the wrong road or the wrong avenue or the wrong direction in life, do something to help them out. Don't just look out of the window. Don't just stay boarded up in your house and hoping somebody else do something that you yourself is capable of doing. You know, I mean, it's going to take us to make the world a better place, you know, and that's what it's all about. It's not all, you don't have to do anything enormous. And making the world a better place is not always about money. It's not always your time, your effort, sharing your, if you're able to teach someone to read and write, you know, who wants to learn how to read and write, that's an effort right there in making the world a better place. Some people, oh, making the world a better place. Wow, I'm not the president. You don't have to be. Making the world a better place is just taking a little time, a little effort to help someone else to try to better themselves. You know, there's a lot of people out here who are looking for mentors. There's a lot of young people who are to somebody who can help them. Obviously, a lot of young people are saying, I've even met some young people who are saying, Mr. Wilder, I wish you were my father because I love the way you have fathered, taking care of your son. I wish I had a father like you. I wish I had a father that would talk to me the way you talk to your son. I've had that kind of thing in my life. And, you know, it was devastating for this young man to come up to me and say, hey, wow, you are a great father. I wished I had a father like you, Mr. Wilder. And I didn't know how to take that because, you know, I never thought of myself as being a 100% good dad. I always thought I needed to get better. But there have been people who have told me constantly that you're a good father. I've had people tell me I'm a rotten dad. So, but more people have told me that they like the effort that I put in being a father. And I do, and I have put in a lot of effort at being a father. But I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of young people out here who do not have the father structure that my son has. A lot of guys out here, young people, do not have fathers. They do not have fathers that they can look up to. They do not have mentors that they can look up to. They do not have any dreams or they don't have any future. And they're just out here on the streets. So we need to do something. We need to do something. You know, so that's what I talk about when I say making the world a better place. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and for God's sake, vote, vote, vote. Making the world a better place, this is the talk of our times, you know, and it's another great sunny day in Chicago. I'm going to talk about the weather a little bit. It's a great day. This is, like I said before, folks, in some of the shows passed back, in some of the previous shows, that this is 2016 has been one of the greatest summers I've ever known. I mean, it's been great. I love it. Sometimes it gets too damn hot, but it's not that bad. You know, it's summer, and I'm looking at it, and we've always, and so far, we've had nothing but bright summer days, sunshine. It hasn't been gray. It has not been raining so far. It's just been gorgeous. It's been gorgeous, and I hope it's gorgeous where you are, even though it is hot, and sometimes it can be dangerously hot, and we cannot spend too much time outside, especially exercising, riding our bikes, because there's always even walking, because there's always a chance of vulnerable people having or getting heat stroke. And heat stroke is something serious. But so far, I mean, it's been great. It's been beautiful. And I'm looking forward to more days like this. You know, and this is August. This is August, August 2016. And it's beautiful. And I'm looking right now at my screen here, and it says Trump repeats his lie that he watched a video of money landing in Iran. Obviously, he's when it says repeats, obviously it means that he said this once before, and a lot of people, he was lying then and he's lying now. I mean, if Donald Trump is talking, he's lying. No doubt about it. He's lying, or either he actually doesn't know what he's talking about. Okay, Donald Trump on Thursday repeated his false claim that he had watched a video of money being unloaded from a plane at an airport in Iran. President Obama was on television and saying that, and a lot of people was accusing him of sending $400,000, I believe it was, in cash, in exchange for hostages. And he just said that that wasn't the case, but somehow Iran got $400,000, and he said this was way back in January, so it's old news, and he's very, very shocked that this is such a surprise. Okay, I'm quoting Donald Trump. It was interesting because a tape was made. You saw that with the entire plane coming in. Trump asked the crowd at a rally in Portland, Maine. Nice plane. Trump's crazy. And the airplane coming and the money coming off. Donald Trump has a peculiar way of talking or saying stuff. He just, I mean, he has a fourth grade, he talks at a fourth grade level. I think he does. Fourth or fifth grade level, maybe even worse. And you can see why the tape was given to us. Okay. They're saying that he's lying. No tape was given to him or his campaign, because they wanted to embarrass our country and they want to embarrass our president, Trump said. And it was the second time in 2 days after the Republican nominee for president claimed to have seen an Iranian video of money being unloaded from a U.S. plane. Now, the problem here is that Trump is the only one supposedly seeing that. No one else, not even journalists, the national news, the publications, nobody but Trump has seen it. This is why they're saying that Trump is fabricating all of this. Trump fabricates everything. All right, but you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. My guest is author Charlene Oliver. She should be along any minute, hopefully. But let me say this. Yesterday was so damn hot, I had my show, we were having more difficulties. Whenever it gets so hot, somehow it messes with the mechanism of the show. And although we do get through it, it's always a big hassle and a fight. And we finally get through it because the show always must go on. The show always must go on. All right.
Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago, and we are helping to make the world a better place, one show at a time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for finding the show, downloading the show, and just having a great time. Here we go.
My son has been arrested for walking while black. So I get it.
A lot of sons have been arrested.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
Amen. I totally. That's Brian Gumbel. He's formerly from one of the morning shows, and he's talking about his own son that could be stopped while walking, while being black. It happens. Okay, let's move right along. Cowardly Ryan calls Trump attacks beyond pale, but he will not rescind his endorsement. You know, I don't understand the Republicans. They do not like Trump. They think Trump is awful. I mean, Trump has been stabbing himself in the foot. He's 20 points behind Hillary nationally and in some of the states, including some states. And they are very, very panicky at that. They are very, very panicky at that. But they will not rescind their endorsement. You know, that's crazy. And the thing about it, Ryan, who is the House of Representatives, he's in charge of the House of Representatives. He's the Speaker of the House, and he's a Republican. However, Trump has said in the last few days that he will not support Ryan. However, Ryan is still endorsing Trump. I mean, I look at it this way. If no one supports me, I'm not going to support them. That's crazy. However, Donald Trump is not going to support Paul Ryan, but Paul Ryan is still supporting Trump. And Paul Ryan is saying that he really doesn't like some of the things Donald Trump is saying, and that he wishes Donald Trump would stay on message. You know, so that's not Donald Trump. No one controls Donald Trump. Donald Trump is going to say what he's going to say, and he doesn't give a damn if you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent. He's going to say what he's going to say to what he's going to say. Donald Trump saying, this is my money. I'm raising this thing. I can say and do what I want. I don't give a damn about the Republicans. I don't give a damn about the Democrats or anyone else. This is me. This is me. I'm Donald Trump. And you know what? They know this, and they know this, but they can't. They want to try to rein Donald Trump in, but that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. And I didn't know Donald Trump was 70 years old. I thought he was much younger. I really did. I thought he was in his 50s, maybe early 60s or something, but I didn't know he was 70. I guess when you got money, you can buy all kinds of things to make you look younger, you know, but however, Donald Trump has gotten a lot older since he's been running for president. Have you noticed that? He's gotten a lot older since the day he first started running for president. I mean, this is grueling. I know campaigns and primaries, it's grueling. And now he's got the general election coming up. It's grueling. It makes you older. I mean, look at Obama, you know. But I have to say Obama still got that smile. I mean, he still got that winning smile that made everybody go out and vote for him. And for my money, he's been sort of a disappointment. But I understand that some people out there, they love him. He can't do any wrong. But I have several reasons to why I'm disappointed in him. And I'm not the only one. There are other phenomenal and well-known national African-American leaders who also they're disappointed in Obama also. But hey, wow, Obama looking at all of us and saying, hey, I don't give a damn. I'm president. I'm leaving office, so I don't care. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Block Talk Radio. Follow me right here. LinkedIn, Amazon.com, Twitter. I'm all over the place. It's such a news day. And wow, murder on the rise in Rio slums as Olympics begin. I can't wait till the Olympics. I just love the Olympics. I mean, they're on television 24 hours a day, and no matter what time you get home, you can turn the television on, and there is the Olympics. Okay, they're saying it's going to be in Rio, and they're saying that a lot of the slums, the slums are really bad in Rio. I don't know if that compares to the slums in India, you know. But the slums anywhere around the world is bad. That's why I'm saying we got to try to help people to want to rise themselves up out of that kind of a mess and make something of themselves, so that's one of the ways of making the world a better place. Obama is also, he was stunned by Trump claiming that the election would be rigged. This election is not rigged. He's just trying to make an excuse for losing. So if he loses, he's going to say, well, I lost because they rigged the election. I lost because the Democrats, including Hillary Clinton and Obama and the rest of them, rigged the election. Anybody who's against Trump, they're rigging the election. I'm going to lose. I know I'm going to lose. You know, he's a... As you can see, I'm not a good impersonator of Donald Trump. I don't try to be, and I really don't care. But this guy's all over the news. He's everywhere. Most of the online publications, Washington Post, New York Times, Raw Story. I mean, every time you see a headline about Donald Trump, it's something negative. It's something negative. And this is weighing down his poll numbers. They're now saying that Donald Trump is bringing down other candidates, Republican candidates for the Senate. And, so if the Democrats take over the Senate, if they take over the House and Hillary wins, then we will be able to get something done. And I've said this several times. If you're going to vote for Hillary, make sure you vote for a Republican representative also, and also a Republican senator. Give her some people that she can work with. Now, if Hillary wins the election, hopefully she will, hopefully by a landslide, if Donald Trump doesn't drop out, if she wins the election, she's going to need a Congress that she can work with. I think Mary Emanuel said the same thing, but I think I said it before he said it. But anyway, we're both right. You have to give the president someone to work with. He cannot work with Republicans. She cannot work with Republicans. If you have a Republican Congress, House of Representatives, and U.S. senators in Congress, and a Democratic president, nothing will get done. I've said this several times on this show. It's going to be more gridlock, more arguing, more bitching, more bickering, more hatred, more BS if you don't give her a Democrat vote, 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 vote. So when we walk into that voting booth on November 8th, we've got to vote not only for the president of the United States, but we have to vote for a representative. We have to vote for a U.S. Senate. For your state. And then she will have someone to work with, someone to talk to and compromise with and get things through Congress. You're not going to get anything through a Republican Congress. They're not doing anything now. Right now, as I speak, the Congress right now, they're on vacation. We have the Zika virus going around. There needs to be money appropriated to fight this disease. But they're on vacation. I think the last time they were in Congress, they voted on this type of thing, and they rejected it. They keep rejecting this thing. President Obama said, hey, we need to fight this. Why aren't you guys in Congress appropriating some money so we can fight this disease? So it doesn't spread everywhere, in every crevice, in every corner of America. Republicans, I don't know, they won't do it. They will not do it. This is why I say, come November, you want to get things done, we have to vote some of these clowns out of office. The Democrats will have to control Congress if Hillary Clinton is going to get anything through, if she's going to get anything done. Executive powers, you can only do so much with executive power. You got to have Congress on your side. And that is no joke. You got to have Congress on your side, especially if you're running for president, you're Democrat, you got to have a Democratic Congress. So, like my board says, vote, vote, vote. Vote three times. Vote for Hillary, vote for a Democratic representative, and a Democratic United States Senator. Especially those two people, latter, should be from. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. It is hot, folks. It's a hot one, but it's like I said before, it's been a beautiful summer, and I'm going to miss it when it's gone. You know, I mean, all right, here we go. Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all your accolades, and welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We try to make the show fun. We try to make it exciting. We try to make it informative. So we're still waiting on our guest here, author Charlene Oliver, but sometimes maybe the heat, I don't know, has something to do with it. Maybe, maybe not. But it's beautiful. It is gorgeous. It is wonderful. It is beautiful. I believe after the show is over, we're going to go outside and we're going to enjoy some of this weather. Wherever you are, if it's great, if it's nice, get outside and enjoy this weather. You know, get a heat stroke. But do try to enjoy the weather, because summer is not going to be around forever. It's not going to be here forever, even though we would love to have. Not going to be here forever. So, you know, grab your significant other and just, you know, and enjoy yourself. Enjoy the weather. I mean, we have a park over here near the lake, and it's a small park, but it's a public park. Of course, it's a public park, and a lot of people attend. A lot of people patronize the park, which is great. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And the park, it is such a nice park, and it's very, very diverse. The neighborhood that I live in, my studio is in, is a very, very nice, diverse neighborhood. But however, the park, there's always movies in the park. There's a night out in the parks, theater in the parks, cafe by the lake. It's just fun. It's just fun, and people are just mulling around because it's so hot. There's plenty of benches, you know, you can always sit down and right in front of you, when you sit on a bench or something, right in front of you is the lake. You're looking out at the lake. You're looking out on the lake, and it is such a beautiful, beautiful sight. You see ships, boats, some everything, fish, whatever. It's just great. It's wonderful. And I want to say to people, you know, are you listening? Get out and enjoy the weather, especially after the sun goes down. You know, there's not too much sun out there, and hopefully there will be a light breeze coming off the lake. Listen to me, I'm sounding like a weather person. I'm sounding like a meteorologist. Lord knows they are wrong enough. I don't need to be wrong, but it's just beautiful, folks. I'm seeing a lot of people right now passing by my window, and they're just out here having a great time. The sun has gone down a little bit. Evening is in full bloom, and it's just great. It's wonderful. And that's why I'm saying after I do the show, we're going to go out and try to enjoy the weather for a few hours. Then I come back in the house and book more shows for next week, because after today, which is Thursday, I will not be back on the air live until Monday. Monday. And during that time that I'm not on the air, you can always podcast the show. I got about 200 and something episodes on Blog Talk Radio. You can just pick one of those shows and just listen to it and enjoy it. You know, give me some feedback on that particular show. Okay. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm assuming my guest is going to show up maybe later on. So therefore, we are going to go back to some of the speeches that were expounded upon at the Democratic Convention, because some of them were so good. They were like this one.
Job is to make decisions. He can't pass the buck to anybody. No one else can do the deciding for him. There is no job like it on the face of the earth. In the power which is concentrated here at this desk, and in the responsibility and difficulty of the decision.
60 GOP national security experts signed a scathing open letter opposing Trump, called Trump's vision of American power and influence, quote, wildly inconsistent and unmoored in principle.
If he governs in any way consistent with some of the things he said as a candidate, I would be very frightened.
He has neither the temperament nor the judgment to be president.
Say this flat out. Donald Trump is unfit to be president of the United States.
He's not fit to be president of the United States.
I know something of the solemn responsibility of leading
We must use our power wisely.
I think there are many people in the upper echelons of the military that are very concerned, not only about some of the things that Mr. Trump has already said he's going to ask the military to do, but more importantly, I think there's an inability for Mr. Trump, at least the way it's been seen, to take advice.
Right. And on what basis is he going to make his decisions? It certainly won't be on any sort of deep knowledge of foreign affairs and national security, because he doesn't have any.
He seems to think that he has all the answers, and that he doesn't need any advice from staff or anybody else.
And that falls under the category of toxic leadership.
Our diplomats are instructed to avoid purely rhetorical hostility. We do not need to use threat to prove we are resolute.
Mr. Trump's bombast is already alarming our allies and fueling the enmity of our enemies.
He doesn't have the temperament our judgment to control himself when he gets mad.
He would shoot from the hip. He would rely on gut instinct.
He is erratic. He says crazy things.
He said one stupid, reckless thing after another, and he's shown absolutely no temperament to try to learn the things that he doesn't know, and he doesn't know just about everything.
There is only one sane policy. A nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought.
We're about to turn over the nuclear codes of the United States to an erratic individual.
He's been talking about the possibility, the future option of using a nuclear weapon against our Western European allies.
His finger would be on the nuclear trigger, and this is a man who doesn't know what the nuclear triad is.
This is not somebody who should be handed the nuclear code.
I think you have to ask yourself, do I want a person of that temperament control the nuclear codes? And as of now, I'd have to say no.
Regardless of your policies, whether you are Republican or Democrat, your fate is tied up with what is done here in this room.
Please welcome Admiral John Hudson from New Hampshire.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening. My name is John Hudson, and unlike Donald Trump, there are two things that I know an awful lot about: law and order. For 11 years, I was a law school dean. For 30 years, I served proudly in the United States Navy, including as the Judge Advocate General. Thank you. Go Navy. Donald Trump calls himself the law and order candidate, but he will violate international law. In his words, he endorses torture at a minimum. He'll order our troops to commit war crimes like killing civilians. And he actually said, you have to take out their families. And what did he say when he was told that was illegal? He said, our troops won't refuse, believe me. This very morning, he personally invited Russia to hack us. That's not law and order, that's criminal intent. Donald Trump would abandon our allies and let more countries get nuclear weapons. He lies about donating to veterans, and he called the military that I served in a disaster. It's embarrassing enough that he's the face of one of our political parties. The real disaster would be if we let Donald Trump become the face of the country that we love. more than 120 Republican national security leaders, recently warned that Donald Trump would, in their words, make America less safe. He even mocked our POWs, like John McCain. I served in the same Navy as John McCain. I used to vote in the same party as John McCain. Donald, you're not fit to polish John McCain's boots. But, America, we have a better choice. Hillary Clinton is the only candidate who knows how to work with our allies, who has a specific plan to defeat ISIS. She's smart and she's steady. She has the experience, the temperament, and the spine to be a superb commander-in-chief. She knows what makes us the envy of the world. It's not our abundant natural resources, or our resilient economy, or even that we have the strongest military on earth. Our strength comes from who we are and who we've always been, our humanity. If we lose our humanity, we lose the battle and we lose the war. ISIS and other radical groups have no humanity. That's their weakness. Our enemy can't defeat us militarily. Victory for them won't be found on the battlefield. For them, victory is to make us more like them, people who torture, who destabilize the international order, who target innocents because they don't look like them and don't pray like them. Donald Trump is a walking, talking recruiting poster for terrorists. And that's not hyperbole. ISIS literally used Trump in a commercial. You know, you can tell a lot about a person by whom they admire. Eleanor Roosevelt, Nelson Mandela, Dorothy Rodham. These are Hillary Clinton's heroes. Donald Trump? Well, Donald Trump admires Donald Trump. And Saddam Hussein, and Kim Jong-un, and of Vladimir Putin, he said, and I quote, in terms of leadership, he's getting an A. I taught national security law. Praising dictators was an automatic F in my class. Let me tell you something. In 2008, as the dean of the University of New Hampshire School of Law, I invited each presidential candidate to talk about terrorism. I'm not sure what they're saying.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
Wow. All right, they are trying to say that Donald Trump's wife, Ivanka, is not a U.S. citizen in so many ways. That's what they're trying to say. The reason why they are investigating his wife's immigration status is because of Donald Trump's racism towards immigrants. So his wife is an immigrant. So my understanding is Donald Trump, his campaign, they're not answering questions about his wife's immigration status. A lot of us feel that she is here illegally. But Donald Trump is in a lot of trouble. He's in a lot of hot water, folks. That's why sometimes it's just, and I have to talk about him on the show because this guy could wind up being president of the United States, and that's something that should never happen. So this show is going to be not only devoted to making the world a better place, and I think one of the reasons that we can make the world a better place is not to elect Donald Trump, because if Donald Trump becomes president, it's going to be a one big mess. And they're talking about not giving him security codes. However, Obama said earlier today that he should be given the codes because it's law. I sort of disagree with that. I mean, you don't give anybody that kind of intelligence, information, who is, some people are saying, is mentally ill. You don't do that. Obama wants him to have the security codes for the nukes. You know, I don't. I really don't. I don't think he's stable enough. If somebody says that, walked up to Trump and said, "Trump, you stink." He's going to want to bomb that entire country of the dictator who said that. We'll be in World War 3, 4, 5, and 6 because this guy is, you know, there are leaders right now looking at the United States and they're laughing and at Donald Trump, says, "Wow, we can have this guy." The world is going to be in chaos if Donald Trump becomes president. And so I totally disagree with President Obama saying, give this guy the nuclear code. Give this guy the red phone. Give this guy all kinds of classified intel. And just hope he doesn't spread it around and start a war. But Donald Trump is so pissed off. I mean, hey, wow. If somebody said, hey, wow, your hair is on backwards. Country, that particular country that said that. But he gets pissed off easily. He gets upset and angry. And when he gets upset and angry, he wants to fight. There's going to be violence. So, no, I don't think that he should have those security codes to the United States. I really don't. I wish – I'm like Harry Reid, the minority leader in the United States Congress, Senate for the senators. I'm like Harry Reid. Give him fake intel. You know, he probably wouldn't know the difference. Wow. And they are investigating his wife. They're saying that his wife is probably not a U.S. citizen. And she's been here since, what, 1995? See, Donald Trump, with all of his divisive rhetoric, all of his racism, with all of his hatred, has caused agencies to investigate his wife. And it seems like there's something there that stinks. I mean, it probably is here illegally and should be deported. It's always something coming out of the Donald Trump campaign. And that's what makes it so exciting. This is the most exciting that I've ever been in a presidential election in a long time. It's sad, but then it's exciting because there's always some new crap coming out of the Trump campaign. Okay, many questions and few answers about how Melania Trump immigrated to the United States. Man, I know Trump is going to lie his ass off about this. Okay, the newly published nude photographs. Yeah, there are nude photographs on the front covers of magazines of Donald Trump's wife. She's naked. And She's naked. Okay, newly published nude photographs of Melania Trump, the wife of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, have raised questions about the story of her immigration to the United States and how the model gained her legal status here. Questions that the Trump campaign is not answering. They're not answering how she gained her legal status. There's no papers of it, of her actually becoming a United States citizen. This is devastating. And Donald Trump and his campaign, they're not answering any questions about that. So that leads a lot of the immigration system within the United States baffled. Is she really a United States citizen? Did she become an American? Did she take the test, the citizen test, to become an American citizen? Melania Trump said that she came to the country in 1996, but the photos were taken in New York in 1995, the nude photos, the naked photos. She met Donald Trump in 1998, and they were married in 2005. So what do we know about Melania Trump? So what do we know about how Melania Trump came to the United States? Question. All right. What has Melania said about her immigration? She said Melania Trump has said that she came to the United States on a legal visa in 1996, got a green card in 2001, and then became a U.S. citizen in 2006. Okay. This, and I'm quoting, "I came here for my career," she told Harper Bazaar in January. I did do well. I moved here. It never crossed my mind to stay here without papers. That is just the person you are." Okay, these are her words, okay? "You follow the rules," quote. "You follow the law." This is her saying this. "Every few months, you need to fly back to Europe and stamp your visa. After a few visas, I applied for a green card and got that in 2001. After the green card, I applied for citizenship, and it was a long process." These are her words. Okay. "Then in February, she told MSNBC, I follow the law the way it is supposed to be. I never thought to stay here without papers. I had a visa. I traveled every few months back to the country to stamp the visa. I came back to the United States. I applied for the green card. I applied for citizenship. Later on, after many years of green card," these are her words, "So I went through the system. I went by the law. Should do that." Okay, these are her words. However, on Thursday, Melania Trump tweeted an additional explanation, but no additional details. And I'm quoting her. "Let me set the record straight," she wrote. I have at all times been in full compliance with the immigration laws of this country. Period. Okay, question. Who sponsored Melania to come to the United States? What kind of visa did she hold? Answer. The Trump campaign has been vague. This week, Trump campaign spokesman Hope Hicks responded to a list of detailed questions of Melania Trump's immigration status with only one line. Melania, quoting, "Melania followed the laws and now is a proud United States citizen." Okay, but a lot of people they seem very, very skeptical of that. They really do. But I don't know. But if she's not a U.S. citizen, if she's not supposed to be here, then it's going to be trouble. Because if she's a U.S. citizen, I was going to say they would have proof of that. That there would be records. in the immigration office saying that this lady is now an American citizen. Obviously, they don't believe that. Okay, most of what we know about how she came to the United States comes from an Italian-born businessman based in New York who once owned modeling agency. He told the Washington Post this week that his agency, the Metropolitan Models, sponsored Melania Claus. I guess that Claus was her name before she married Trump, for an H-1B work visa in 1996 after he spotted her while scouting models in Milan and Paris. Working models are eligible for an HIB if they can show distinguished merit or ability in their field. Wow. Okay. So she has said she came in 1996. Yes, multiple times. You know, but anyway, folks, let me stop. I'm reading an article, and it's I probably need my glasses. But anyway, I'm reading an article on this. But anyway, the bottom line is that the United States officials and the immigration system in the United States do not believe that she's a United States citizen. They think that she is an alien without papers, that she shouldn't be here, that she's lying, period, about being a United States citizen. She's lying. And multiple questions need to be asked. However, but the as they've been saying, the Trump campaign is refusing to answer questions. If they're refusing to answer questions, there is your answer right there. She is not a citizen of the United States. And with Trump bashing immigrants, he might as well be bashing his own wife. Okay, I could be wrong on this, but it doesn't seem. But if I am, I'm not too far from it. Okay, there's going to be more coming out about this, folks. Stay tuned to the George Wilder Jr. Show, or either, you know, your local news outlet, and find out what's going on. But anyway, Trump, it doesn't matter, really. Trump is in hot water. I mean, this guy is all the way in hot water. He is so down in the polls, it's ridiculous. If the election was held today, he would lose in a landslide. And the reason why Trump is down as far as he is because he's shot his own self in the foot. He's shot in his own campaign in the foot by saying stupid, ignorant, dumb, and hateful things throughout his campaign, even while he was debating on stage a few months back. You know, and the guy is just totally unfit for office. He's totally unfit. He should not be nowhere near the Oval Office. But who knows? Who knows what can happen from now? I think we got about 92, 93 more days or something before Election Day. It's coming fast. It's coming fast. And Donald Trump is falling fast in the polls. He is falling so fast, it's ridiculous. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's do this. This is interesting.
You're watching The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
That's right.
Dr. Umar Johnson.
Peace
my
and
brother.
Love.
Peace.
Peace and love, family.
Bro?
All is well. Glad
to
be back.
Now let's get right to it, man. In
yes,
light
sir.
Of everything that's going on,
mm-hmm.
What are the solutions?
What
I think we've discussed the problem so much. What are the solutions?
All right. Before I state the solution, I would have to challenge you on that. Because although we talk about the problems a lot of people don't understand how the problem operates.
Gotcha.
Let me give you an example. Take miseducation.
Okay.
People know the children aren't learning. They know black boys are not graduating. They know special ed is an issue. They know ADHD is a problem. But they don't know how this operates.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand how the child goes from the classroom into the special education system.
Okay.
So they have to be taught how it operates. You follow? So we understand that police genocide is a problem in the black community. We understand that structural inequality, disproportionality, i.e. racism, is a problem. But do we understand how racism operates? So I think that once you understand how the problem operates and manifests itself, you're now in a position to solve it. Mm. Someone comes to me for therapy. Before I do any therapy, what I do, a clinical history.
Mm.
Is there depression in your family? Have you been depressed before? Have you ever contemplated suicide? So I have to understand your background and how you've been living your life in order to solve your current everyday problems. So now, coming to the present, what we're seeing going on around the country. Let's be honest. Africans were brought to America to serve. To serve. We're no longer necessary for the American economic order to operate. They don't need us to function. That explains the purging. That explains the ethnic cleansing.
Even with all these Negroes making money?
Well, remember now, when you look at the black folks who are rich, they are a small percentage of the general body politic of the community. You understand? 85% of black folks are struggling. Half of our children grow up in poverty. Most of our single-parent black mothers are poor, even with a burgeoning rate of black women earning their college degrees.
Mm.
So simply put, black America is suffering despite the television projection of success. Yes, we are more educated than ever before. We have the bachelor's, we have the master's, we have the doctorates. But that education has not taken place alongside an increase in wealth acquisition. We're smarter, but we still don't own anything.
Mm.
But we know we're poor. We know some of us are not well educated. We know some of us have a lot of problems due to where we're growing up in our environment.
Yes.
But besides all of that,
mm-hmm.
we got a bigger problem with racism, the way that other people look at us.
I agree.
You know what I mean? But I'm not saying it's right, but the way we look at ourselves is bad, too.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because if I'm walking down the street and I see some brothers with some hoods on, it makes me think twice.
Right.
So if it makes me think twice, I know it's going to make somebody else think twice, but it doesn't give us doesn't give them the right to put a
But that's based off your experiences, though.
But
it's
like, also based off conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
The conditioning is critical. Media is critical to the social agenda of any country. You understand? You take Adolf Hitler. Before he did what he did in Germany, he conducted a media campaign that sought to destroy the image of a European Jew in the German mind before the physical Holocaust began.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing in America. Before you begin taking the black life, you must kill the image of the black life.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at gangster rap, which plays a hand in it,
mm-hmm.
okay, when you look at the way in which we're portrayed in movies,
mm-hmm.
when you look at the way in which we're portrayed on the radio, popular media, magazines, it is in a very negative way, as if to say these people, the world would be better off without these people.
That's why they leave people criminal records when
they
kill them.
Exactly. In other words, it's not so bad that he died because he went to jail anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kill the image before you kill the person. Why? Because people will take up for people who are unjustly treated. But if you can convince the world that we would be better off without these people by killing their image, then when the physical carnage begins, no one will care.
How do we change that, though? How do we change the way that America looks at African Americans? And how do we change the fact that these racist individuals, racist police officers, stop pulling out the gun? See, I think it's you have to penalize them.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, you know, it's kind of like a kid. You know, your kid does something bad, and you say, okay, it's okay. He's going to continue to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you bust his ass, next time he's thinking about doing it, he's going to be like, well, you know what? My pops is going to bust my ass. I feel like the police officers that kill African Americans, just kill people in general, they don't get penalized for it.
I agree with it. You're absolutely correct. For example, behavioral psychology, two basic laws is what? All behavior is a function
mm-hmm.
of the context in which it takes place. The American racial hierarchy, it's a function of the context. And then it's a function of the consequences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You follow?
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, behavior never stands still. Whether it's you, whether it's a child, whether it's a country, whether it's the police. Behavior is always getting worse or it's always getting better. So when Zimmerman wasn't punished for Trayvon, that automatically created a context for it to happen again. Do you understand? Walter Scott, Tamir Rice, it creates a context.
Michael
so the
Ryan.
Next police officer says, well, wait a minute. I can be a little bit more trigger happy because the last five black men and women, Sandra Bland, who were murdered by police, were not held accountable. So when you do nothing about misbehavior, then you're actually supporting its repeating
itself.
Now,
what do protests do? Because people protest and they say, you know, and I love the unity, and I love the unity of African-American people. I wish we could be more unified when it's not just a brother dying. But I feel like sometimes the protests, what is it getting accomplished?
Okay.
You know? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, you protest, you shut down a highway, there's an ambulance that's trying to get somebody to a hospital, that person dies in an ambulance. You know, I'm stuck in traffic. I can't pick up my kid at 5 p.m. So what is the protest actually doing? Is it going to make the cop look at us any better? Like, what can we do besides, I think, the protests. I don't know if the protests really work.
Right. Well, first of all, we got to keep in mind that the black person is normally dead before the ambulance shows up to get them in the first place.
True.
So let's be clear on that. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, Envy. Protest is the first stage of any political economic struggle.
Right.
Protest is your marketing program to let the world know what I stand for, what's happening to mm-hmm. me, and what I want. Protest allows you to control the public narrative about your struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Without the protest, the world doesn't know why you're doing what you're doing.
That's
so
real.
Protest is important mm-hmm. because it is your way to put out your message.
Gotcha.
So you can't do nothing without it. The problem with black people is there's nothing after the protest.
Right.
Do you understand? The protest becomes the goal instead of the means to the end.
That's what I keep asking. What is the solution? What's the next action? Like we saw.
Well, let me tell you what has to happen now.
Okay.
Because now we're in a state of crisis for black America.
Okay.
Three things black America has failed to do, which is going to keep this carnage machine in place, this police genocide. Number one, we have failed to publicly criticize and hold accountable the executive branch of the United States government, i.e. President Barack Obama. Despite all the killings, despite all the murders, despite an unemployment rate and a dropout rate that is greater under a black president than it was under the two previous Republican presidents, black people have remained silent. Mm. Obama has ignored black folk. In fact, we are the only so-called minority population in the country for which he has done nothing nor has spoken significantly for our issues. Compare us to LGBT. They got three laws under Obama. Three. That is unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
How many laws did black people get under Obama to protect us from police genocide or even to improve the schools or to reduce incarceration?
Wow.
Zero. Okay, they got a Supreme Court justice. Latinos got a Supreme Court justice. LGBT got a Supreme Court justice. President Obama had the opportunity to appoint the first African-American female Supreme Court justice, and he chose not to act. It's not all his fault, though. We have created a context where the president can ignore black people and get away with it because we told the entire world when he was elected that all he had to do was just be black and we were fine. Remember?
Yeah, we didn't.
He doesn't have to do anything but be black. That is the worst thing you can say as a marginalized, oppressed group in such a racist country as this, as to tell the world that the president, the executive branch of the United States government, does not have to be accountable for you.
That's for any head of state, though. Any head of state,
yes,
we elect, we need to push.
I agree.
And make sure things happen.
But Obama is the first president out of 44, the first one from George Washington up, that has not had to deal with any sort of public criticism from black people.
Mm-hmm.
And if he leaves office without any, here's the problem. If we let Obama leave office without any condemnation from the black community, by virtue, you cannot hold Hillary or Trump accountable for what they do not do for black people, because you have now created a precedent where a president can come in for 8 years, ignore you, even with police genocide, and not receive any criticism.
Why do people make excuses? You know, and I was always mad. I was upset about this because I felt like he was our president, you know, and I felt like when certain things happen, I felt like he should be on the front lines because he's dealt and seen, and I'm sure he's been pulled over before. I'm
mm-hmm.
sure he's been racially profiled before. So it kind of bothers me when I see a lot of these individuals get shot and killed, and you don't really hear much from them.
Exactly.
Even to the thing with, you know, when he flew back to go to the funerals and speak to the officers in Dallas, I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also thought, well, what about Baton Rouge?
Exactly.
What about
exactly
Minnesota?
Exactly.
What about Ferguson?
He's not going to do that because President Obama understands something that most blacks in America do not understand. The first business of America is racism. Let's be clear about something. Most white people in America,
mm-hmm.
okay, are also suffering economically, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm white mm-hmm. in a country based on white privilege, what is my claim to fame if I don't have a decent education, don't have a good job? For many white people in this country, their only claim to fame is the fact that I can say I exercise privilege vis-a-vis black people. Obama understands that. So America is held together by the fact that the poor white man understands that he still exercises a privilege that the rich black man does not.
And that's what Donald Trump is reminding them. Donald Trump is reminding all
the
white people.
Oh, Donald Trump changed the game. And let me tell you why. The United States power structure underestimated the impact of an unapologetically honest control over the American electorate. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. In other words, Trump is saying to white folks what white folks feel.
Poor white folks, too.
Yes, poor white folks. So you got a rich, wealthy white man appealing to poor white folks. You've never had that. But it's working because he is unapologetic. He's ignorant. He's a fool. But he's honest.
Mm-hmm.
And white folk can respect and identify with a white male who's willing to be honest. In other words, Donald Trump intentionally made sure he was the polar opposite of Barack Obama. Look at Obama. You ask Obama a question, you don't get an answer. You never get a straight answer from Obama. It's always what we got to see. Let's see what the Americans think. Now, go back to George Bush. George Bush told you what he felt. He was another idiot, but he was honest.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is honest. The reason white folks are not rallying behind Hillary the way that the power structure wants them to is because Hillary is the same old thing. She's Clinton all over again. She's Obama all over again.
Correct.
She's a Bilderberg.
Talking
She's politically
points.
Correct.
Yeah.
Her whole message is scripted. Trump's is not. So the issue now is how do we engineer an election where Hillary wins? Because right now, Trump is carrying the momentum. See, remember now, people don't choose the president anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But you want the people to choose the person you wanted. So the illusion of democracy continues to prevail. America is not a democracy. America is a republic. That's why when people pledge the flag, and I hope there's no black boys pledging the flag, but when people pledge the flag, they pledge the flag to the republic. The word democracy is not in the pledge. The word democracy is not in the preamble. The word democracy is not in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The word democracy is not in any of the 50 state constitutions. So why is America called a democracy when it's really a republic? Because it is the illusion of inclusion, the belief that the people actually control its leaders when it does not.
So with that said, right, for as much as we know that America has a history of racism, institutionalized racism, systemic racism, why did Barack Obama become president? Why did
Barack,
they allow Barack
excellent
to become
question.
President?
Okay, every president that is elected is given a domestic mandate and an international mandate. There's something they need you to do domestically. There's something they need you to do internationally.
Mm-hmm.
But President Obama, his international mandate was to reopen Africa's resources to Western exploitation.
Right.
George Bush destroyed the economic conversation between America and Africa. And as you know, Africa is the richest continent on the face of the earth. No country can survive without it. If you have a cell phone, laptop, television, a car, airplane, it requires a substance, a material called coltan. The Congo is the number one producer of coltan on the globe. No Congo, no cell phones. So America needs Africa. Bush destroyed the relationship, though, with the African Union. With Obama's father being Kenyan and his mother being white, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
He was the perfect person to put in the White House to reopen up that relationship with Africa, which he has done, okay? And through AFRICOM, which is African Command, President Obama has successfully recolonized Africa in the name of Western financial interest at a rate we haven't seen since Africa was under colonialism. So he succeeded internationally.
Mm-hmm.
That was the international mandate. Get the money back from Africa, the gold, the diamonds, the oil, the coltan, get it back. He got it.
Some people would say that Barack did.
What's the domestic mandate?
The domestic mandate.
Mm-hmm.
The reason President Obama was made president domestically is to brainwash and manipulate black America long enough so the American power structure could take every civil right that our ancestors fought for and give it to every other minority group. So by the time Obama leaves office, all of our rights will be have taken from the other minority groups, and we will be back in the 1960s Jim Crow style.
So how does that work? Because I keep looking at the Constitution like, did they remix it for black people?
It doesn't apply to you anyway.
Yeah.
Remember now, when the fourth, remember, 1865, you get the 13th Amendment. You're free, okay? 1867, you get the 14th Amendment. Equal protection under the law. But the 1866. But the 14th Amendment isn't ratified till 1868.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because you need two-thirds of the states to ratify an amendment. They said, we're not giving black folks equal protection under the law. So what were you between 65, emancipation, and 68, ratification of the 14th Amendment? You were simply a resident, not a citizen. Black people in America today are still residents, not citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And we confuse the words liberty with freedom. Liberty and freedom are not the same. White people have freedom. Black people have liberty.
Mm.
Freedom is the ability to make decisions without external control. Liberty is the ability to make decisions because an external control gave you the privilege. Do you see the difference?
Mm-hmm.
One of them, you got people doing what they want to do. The other, you can do what you want to do within these constraints because we still own you. That's exactly why Abraham Lincoln emancipated the slaves. Emancipation simply means to
to let go from bondage. It also means a transference of ownership from the individual to the state. They never eliminated slavery. They just transformed it.
Now, people would say that Barack Obama did Obamacare, which helped a lot of African Americans get health care. They would say that he did that for African Americans. They would also say that he opened up the White House to a younger
audience.
That's your
shirt, by the way. Thank you, my college tour.
Thank you. Appreciate it. They said that, you know, that he would, that there are stuff that he does for the African American community. They say his hands are tied behind his back.
Mm-hmm.
There's no support in Congress. They
mm-hmm.
said he's opened up the White House to musicians, artists,
mm-hmm.
to kids that normally wouldn't get a chance to see the White House, wouldn't get a chance to be in the White House,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't get a chance to learn in the White House. They said he's done a lot for youth.
Okay.
Do you agree? Or?
I totally disagree. What has Obama do to change the intentional exploitation of black children in special education? What has Obama done to increase the rate of African-American teachers and principals? What has Obama done to modernize the schools in predominantly African-American school districts? What has Obama done to reduce the suspension and expulsion rate of black children? I don't care how many Negroes are dancing in the White House, singing in the White House, and cooning in the White House. What have you done of substance, systematically, to improve the quality of life for black folk, as you have done to improve the quality of life for Latinos, immigrants, and LGBTs?
Have you ever seen a good president in your lifetime?
No, you can never do that.
Yeah.
Because America is based off racism. It was founded on racism, which is ironic because when you listen to CNN, and I was watching D.L. Hughley with mm-hmm. the little piece that he had, they always talk about playing the race card. You understand? That is the most misleading concept I've ever heard of, playing the race card. When we was brought up here in slavery, okay, was that playing a race card or was that racism?
That was racist.
Do you understand?
Word up.
America is racism.
From slavery to segregation.
America is
Jim
racism.
Crow.
When Birth of a Nation came out, the first major motion picture, which was a story about how letting black folks out of slavery would simply destroy the social context of America, guess where it was played? In the White House. The president had a private viewing of Birth of a Nation.
Right, but you know, oh, did Nate Parker and Nat Turner movie?
No. He sarcastically named his Nat Turner movie after the original Birth of a Nation to take hit at it.
Got you.
Yes.
But, you know, a lot of people, you know.
And we was at Nat Turner land 2 days ago with the college tour.
You know, a lot of people say that, you know, that's not necessarily true. You know, they say that HBCUs are not warranted now, that they should be, you know, historically black colleges are not needed. They say, you know,
exactly.
The NAACP is not needed.
Exactly. And where did that argument come from, Envy?
Well,
the argument came from since you got a president in the White House.
That's what William said the other day. So I wanted your opinion on what you felt about HBCUs and the NAACP, because he feels like it's not necessarily warranted, that it should be open to everybody. And that it's
Let
not
me
needed.
Say this. As long as something is being done special to the black man and woman, something must be done specifically for the black man and woman to counteract that. So, for example, earlier when you said the Obamacare and things like that,
mm-hmm.
there are black folks who benefited from that envy. But in order to help us, you have to do something specifically for us, because our history is specific. We're the only people in this country who are not of white skin who cannot be deported, which is the central challenge of the black predicament. What did W.E.B. Du Bois said? He said the number one problem of the 21st century will be the color line. I'm going to take it a step further. The number one problem of the 21st century in America is, what do we do with 40 million black folks who we do not want and cannot deport? This is why we are kept from realizing our true gifts and talents, because you cannot be sent back to Africa. Slavery psychologically destroyed your connection to your mother continent. For example, Chinese can be sent back to China. Latinos can be sent back to Cuba, Puerto Rico, or points beyond. Okay? An East Indian can be sent back to India. Okay? An Arab can be sent back to whatever Arabian nation from which they come. Where do you send African Americans back to?
Because I'd be lost in Africa.
Because your psychological connection was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So what do you do with these people?
Chick-fil-A in Africa, bro.
Cut it out.
Sorry,
what do you do with these people who you do not want and cannot deport? You must create a system of genocide from within that seeks to remove them. That's why mass incarceration will never change. This is why people keep saying they spend millions of dollars on prison. It costs less to send them to school. So why are you spending this money on jail instead of sending them to school? Because this ain't about money. This is about an America that is free from
right.
black people.
Mm.
Police extermination feeds that. Abortion, which is the number one killer. Most people don't understand this. More black babies are murdered in the stomach than they are on the street corner. And why? Because a black woman growing up in poverty with already a couple of children, seeing how hard it is to make ends meet, is probably going to think about potentially terminating that pregnancy. Mm. It's not a moral issue. It's a political, economic, white supremacist issue. Why bring another life in this world so they can only be murdered by the police like Trayvon?
Or just struggle in the hood.
Or just struggling in the hood.
Do you think the issue with cops is a black-white thing or a police?
Without question.
Or a police abusing power thing?
It's both. Remember, when slavery ends in 1865, there are no national incarceration systems. Most states didn't even have a fully functioning prison system. That's when they created the prison system in 1865. That's when they gave you the first statewide prison systems. Why? Because we got 2 million black folks, 4 million black folks. We just left out of slavery. They don't have jobs. We're not going to give them any, so that means they got to do what to eat, Envy?
Rob and steal.
So we're going to create vagrancy laws. If I catch you stealing anything, guess what? That's a felony. I'm going to put you on a chain gang, and you're going to be on a chain gang for 10 years for stealing a lollipop. This is what they did. You could go to jail for not having a job. You could go to jail for being homeless. They made simple, petty offenses major felonies. So that from the beginning of so-called emancipation, the prison system existed for one reason, to remove black men from the society. The jail is a slave ship that sits on water. Excuse me.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me. The George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you, everybody. Thanks. Have a great evening. Have a wonderful weekend. We will be back on the air Monday. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all my guests. Thank you so much.
Father, open eyes that we may see to follow thee. Let it.
compassion. And please hear us. Hear us when we cry.
Join me next week. Meanwhile, listen to all the podcasts of this show. You can. They're all great. They're all wonderful. Check out my books and short stories on Amazon.com. And I will see you guys on the radio starting next week. We're going to be off three or four, but at least 3 or 4 days before we go. Bye-bye.